You're listening to the Story Selling Podcast, where we help you create better content, double your impact and your revenue through the power of story and sales psychology. Here's your host, digital marketing strategist and founder of the Story Selling Masterclass, 16 Ramos.
Happy Valentine's Day. If you're planning on having a productive Valentine's evening, you've come to the right place. Enjoy this episode, which was taken from a live episode of the Story Selling series. Enjoy. If you've ever asked yourself, how do I stand out when there are other brands doing the same thing I'm doing, then this episode is for you. Because on this episode, we're going to cover the three questions that you should ask yourself about your business so that you can retarget your message, cut through the noise, and stand out even if you aren't the only brand doing what you're doing, even if you're in a competitive niche or industry, and even if there are other bigger brands than you. So we're going to talk about how to stand out in a competitive space and figure out your unique brand positioning. So if you are hearing me or watching me for the very first time, my name is 16 Ramos. I'm a digital marketing strategist, and I am the founder of the Story Selling Masterclass, where I teach people how to double their revenue through the power of storytelling and sales psychology. On the show, we talk about storytelling and content strategies to increase awareness, engagement, and conversions online. And this show is called the Story Selling Series. Welcome, welcome. We are live on YouTube, so feel free to comment if you have any questions. And if you're streaming from the podcast, please subscribe and send in a good review if you find this helpful. So let's talk about the hustle culture a little bit. The good part about the digital age is that it has made it ultra easy to build a business from scratch. The bad part about the digital age is that it has made it ultra easy to build a business from scratch. It's both good and bad for me, because while accessibility is there, it's made so many industries so crowded. And you might already be feeling this when you create content and it just doesn't seem to be reaching anyone, or when you're trying to talk about your business but you struggle to find why where your ideal client is, or you struggle to have it seen by the right people. Okay, so it creates this pressure. I understand this because I've gone through that for years in my business before I figured out a way to position my brand. Even if I'm not the only coach out there, I'm far from the best, actually. And in a lot of ways, I'm still starting in this industry. But there is a formula to it. There are certain questions that you can ask yourself. But I do understand that struggle. It creates this pressure to be better and bigger. And the added layer of that problem is that there's always going to be someone better and bigger, and industries get even noisier. So the result for you is that your message gets watered down and gets drowned out by all these other brands. And in the end, you don't reach your ideal client. And of course, this hurts your bottom line and your morale. But how come, this is my biggest question when I was wondering about this, is how come other brands stand out and other brands don't? On the surface, you might point to ads, right? You might point out the fact that they have bigger budget for ads, or they have celebrity collabs, or they're just generally in a better position to get more exposure, usually paid exposure. So while all of those, all of those paid ads, paid exposures contribute to your exposure and growth, not all brands do this. In fact, of the worldwide e-commerce traffic, I was doing some research earlier, I was even shocked by this number. Only 4% happens through paid search ads. So again, in all of the traffic that happens in the e-commerce world, at least, I was looking at that in particular, only 4% of traffic happens through paid ads, and the rest is organic. So when you think about it, this stat, by the way, is from Endpoint Digital, if you want to check them out. So 4%, that's really small when you think about it. So the rest is organic. So what are the more successful brands doing that help them stand out? And what are the things that you could do wrong to, that puts you on the opposite side of the realm? So you want to clarify three things. First, you want to clarify what your ideal client profile is. Who are you serving? Second, you want to clarify what your offer statement is. Third, you want to clarify your overall content strategy. So let's get into the three questions, or these three areas. And I'll also get into some of the sub questions or the sub items that I asked myself when I launched all my other businesses, but also these are the same questions that I talk to my story selling students about. In fact, a lot of the foundational work that happens as they launch or relaunch, if it's a rebrand, revolve around these three areas. So first is, what is your ideal client's demographic, behavioral, and psychological profile? You really have to understand these three: demographics, behavior, and psyche, so that you get into that level of understanding. They understand you, you understand them, and they know it. So first, let's look into the demographics of it all. So certain things like age, job, occupation, gender, status. So certain questions that sub questions to this is, what do they do what do they do for a living? What's their job? This dictates their habits. This dictates their lifestyle. And meshed into that will be what they buy. So another contributor to, that influences their purchasing behavior is, how much do they make? This dictates spending and how much of it is saved and what they would consider disposable budget. What's their household like? Are they living alone? Do they have a family? Are they single? Do they live in the city? Do they live in the country? This dictates their priorities. If you have a family, you tend to buy for the kids first before you consider your own needs. Or if you're in an urban situation or urban location, you might think about safety and all of your inconvenience. So your purchasing habits tend to veer towards those categories. So make sure that you ask the most important questions about demographics that affect mostly their buying behavior. So second is behavioral questions. So mostly these questions tell you about what they're interested in. So what is their behavior like? So how do they spend their time when they're not working? Where do they hang out? How do they entertain themselves? Where do they relax? Who do they follow online? This is one of the most important questions to me. One of the most important items that I really spend a lot of time on, especially with my students, is if you already know or have an idea of, let's say, the personification of your ideal client. You might be thinking about a real person that you know as a friend or as a customer. Think about them and then look through their profile and see who they follow. And that really tells you a lot about what they're interested in, first of all, who they idolize, what they're into, and the content that really appeals to them. And a lot of that serves as hints to, what to pick up for your own content strategy. So who do they follow online? What do they shop for? So you want to align yourselves kind of in their line of view. So if you want to stay top of mind, you want to be included in their feed. And you won't be included in that person's feed if you're totally off base with aesthetics, with the messaging, with the content. It's totally not a match. When there's not a match with what they're interested in and what you're communicating, you're not going to be included in that curated feed of theirs. So this is the reason why I really look into what brands they follow, is because I want to see, what are these brands telling this person that makes this person interested? And is there any part of that that I agree with or that I align with, so that I can take that and create my own version of it or create my content that amplifies that message even more, so that my ideal client can hear me? What kind of buyer are they? This is also something that I look at. Are they thrift buyers, luxury buyers, deal hunters? Because this dictates the way I package my product, whether that's a service or that's a physical product. I have both kinds in my businesses. So if there are, say, luxury buyers, I tend to prioritize more of the high end kind of packages or single items that I know they'd look at the value, they'd look at the clout, they'd look at the reviews, and they'd look at the results before they, you know, before they start asking questions about the price tag, because that really doesn't matter. But if they're deal hunters or thrift finders, then I'm going to find a way to package up my product, put them in a bundle somehow, run discounts, run campaigns, so that I can really appeal to that kind of behavior. So a lot of these things really dictate the way I position my business or I decide certain things in my business. Psychological questions involve, you know, what motivates them? What inspires them? What do they aspire for? Or what are they afraid of? What are their most urgent problems? And then the most important element in here is, you know how they feel, but also you want to learn the words they use to communicate these feelings. So what words do they use to express anger, to express frustration, to express their wants, their needs? And a lot of this is just really social listening. You want to pay attention and really care about them and engage. So if you already have an idea about who this person is, as I'm asking you these questions, you might already be thinking of a particular person that you know in your circle. So go through their socials and check out what they're sharing in their stories, check out what they're sharing on their posts, and it might give you a glimpse of what's going on in their lives and certain ways they say it out loud as well. So after you figure out the answers to these, you'll understand who you're talking to. And better yet, you'll know the exact things to say to communicate them and to communicate with them in a way that they understand. So the next step is to imagine the personification of this profile. So what the, you know, at the end of this, when you're finally creating your content, when you're finally on that live stream or that reel, you want to imagine one person listening to you behind the screen. One person. That really eliminates a lot of the pressure that you're feeling about being able to get in front of a wide audience. Think about one person first. And if you win with one person, you can win with 10, and then you can win with 100, and then you can win with 1,000. But you really have to master how to communicate to the individual first. So then one person, imagine one person listening to you behind the screen, and then you craft a message and make it as targeted as possible to that person's life. So that brings me to the second part or second line of questioning, which is, how does your offer serve this person? So first question, if I could just review that, is what is your ideal client's profile? Once you know exactly who you're trying to target, second is, how do you help them now? How does your offer serve this person? First, you know, sub item to this is, are your products or services priced accordingly, according to what they can afford, according to their perceived value or how they perceive how valuable something is? So you really want to dive into or dial back into what your ideal client sees and how they perceive what valuable is. You might believe that, you know, this is the industry standard, this is the way I think this is the way I want to price it, this is the what my products are worth, I should totally be charging more. But if that doesn't match the ideal client profile, then it's not going to reach them, it's not going to appeal to the person that you want to serve. Second sub question here is, how does it address their most urgent problems? So your product or your service really has to appeal to their need for survival. In many, many forms, people are thinking about survival, not just physical or literal survival out in the woods, but survival socially, economically, psychological survival, you know, something that makes them look smart, feel good, accepted, safe, wealthy. So in, you know, I have another video where I discuss all of these things about survival, but it has to, whatever your product or your service is, has to address the most urgent problem that your ideal client has. Not a problem that you made up yourself, but an urgent problem that they really have. And then once you have the answers, when you articulate your offer statement, incorporate descriptors of your ideal client's identity and circumstances. What we're trying to accomplish with the second line of questioning is, how do we communicate our offer in a way that appeals to our ideal client, in a way that makes it look irresistible to them? That way you will not sound like a blend in brand or a Me Too brand or a brand that they've seen somewhere else, but a brand that truly understands them and a brand that truly wants to help them. That's the goal. So when you're creating or crafting an offer statement, you really want to merge that or marry that with their identity and their circumstances. So for example, say you're a beauty brand, right? And your ideal client profile is the 30 to 40 year old woman who has the money but doesn't have the time. She's tired. She has a lot going on. She wishes she had time to shop though, or time to take care of herself. So you're appealing to that kind of woman. You can say something like, we offer simple skincare for the busy woman, or lazy skincare routines for busy women. So that way you're really calling out what kind of woman you're trying to attract, but also you're positioning your offer in a way that screams convenience and ease, because lazy, simple, easy, these are some of the descriptors that people like that, busy people, are looking for, so that it doesn't seem like they're going to take a lot of investment, you know, invest a lot of time just trying to get results that they want. Or, you know, if you're selling a physical product, you can say simple skincare that works in 5 minutes. So very, very descriptive. They can imagine themselves doing that. Simple, 5 minutes, I can go to bed after. So another example is if your ideal client is a stay-at-home mom, right? Looking for organic snacks for their kids, but the kids hate veggies, so veggies. So let's say that, you know, after you've done your homework, this is the ideal client avatar or the ideal client profile that you came up with. So you can say something like, our organic snacks are so yummy that your kid won't know they're eating broccoli. You know, that's very, very descriptive. Or yummy snacks for the pickiest eater in your house. And I give that as an example because those aren't words that came from me. Those are words that came from one of my students' ideal clients, is that the mom says, is such a picky eater, my kid. Honestly, the pickiest eater ever. Our menu revolves around whether or not this kid is going to eat it. So for the pickiest eater in your house, here are the snacks. So you understand now why it's so important that you listen to them, because if you listen hard enough, they will tell you how to craft your message. So if you don't want to be just another brand, your language has to handpick specific words that come from your ideal client. And that's why you really need to listen and look at what they post. So that's the second line of questioning, is how does your offer help them? Third is, how does your content strategy align with your client's identity, problems, and aspirations? So now you know you've done the foundational work. You know who they are. You've already crafted a product or, you know, service offering that really attracts or appeals to them. Third, let's talk about it through content, right? That's the next step. So you don't want to go out and just talk about me. This is our product. These are our services. That will make you sound really monotonous. So again, you want to dial it back into your audience. Does your content strategy reflect them, their identity, problems, and aspirations? So when you post something, your audience needs to clearly pick up one or all of these things: who you are, who you serve, and how you serve them. Okay? So you don't need to be saying all of these, but when you post, you have to be saying one of these: who you are, who you serve, and then how you serve them. So when I create content, what helps me is having a framework. So this one really helped me a lot. I'm going to tell you about it. Not just for my overall content, but also when I craft a brand message for any of my businesses, or when I help students craft brand messages for their own businesses as well. So it sounds something like, we are a company that helps this kind of people get from point A to point B with our offer so that you can achieve a certain result. So imagine that as a fill in the blank statement. We are a company that helps this kind of people get from point A to point B with our offer so that they can achieve a certain result. So your content doesn't need to say all that again, but whenever you post, you need to say at least one of those things, or one part of that, you know, one segment of that statement. So for example, if you are a nutrition brand and you offer meal kits, right? Say you're targeting the remote workers, work from home audience. You do all your homework, you fill out the profile, the avatar, you know exactly what your offering is. Then you can say something like this. We make affordable and healthy meals you can prep in 10 minutes so you don't have to miss your next Zoom call. Right. I love this. I love this. Instead of just saying, we make prepped meals you can, you know, you can eat from home, or we make healthy meals you can prep from home. Every single business sounds exactly like that. But I love this particular message because of several reasons. Number one, it's very clear about what it offers. That's the very first thing. They are offering prepped meals. Number two, it identifies price positioning, affordable. So it just doesn't just say we make prepped meals. They say we make affordable and healthy meals you can prep in 10 minutes. So there's price positioning there. Third, I love this because it relates to the client's lifestyle. When they say you can prep this in 10 minutes, so you acknowledge that that person is working from home, it's still busy, they're probably in front of their computer sitting in their home office for hours and they can't miss that next call, so they need something quick. So it acknowledges that ideal client's lifestyle. Fourth reason why I love this is because it incorporates a specific pain point, missing a Zoom call. It's a very visual description of what that ideal client's circumstances are. And it also sheds light to the fact that you understand what's going on in their daily lives because of the fact that you pointed it out so that you don't miss your next Zoom call. And that is how you achieve that feeling of, how do they know? How does this brand know that this is what's going on? That's how you achieve lots of people going into your comments, oh my God, this is exactly me. Oh my God, how did you know that it's real? The struggle is real, etc. The key is specificity. So the same principle is applied to your content, topic-wise, copy-wise, and aesthetics-wise. Dial it back to your audience, always. So when you create content, you want to see if, number one, you're being descriptive. So don't just say, again, we make meal kits, but healthy meal kits, affordable meal kits. Really call out, use those descriptors. You also want to take a look at whether or not you're incorporating your ideal client's identity and psyche to build a connection. Call them out. What are they like? Who are they? Are they busy, ambitious, tech savvy, skin savvy, fashionable, minimalist? Call this out and let your aesthetics reflect that. Okay. And then you also want to make sure that you're using simple language or building a bridge with verbiage they're using themselves. So I actually had to adjust my delivery a little bit when it comes to this. This is a personal learning experience. Personally, I veer towards the formal when I talk to my friends. Even my friends know this is like we talk so formally, like we were in an office setting. So I do tend to be formal when it comes to word choices and tone, but I realized that I needed to change that considering that I'm trying to serve entrepreneurs or solopreneurs that are getting into sales, content, and automation, and they are learning a lot of these concepts for the very first time. So I can't be too technical or too formal. Instead, I need to use a lot of examples, a lot of analogies, and simple language so that they understand what we're trying to accomplish. So make sure that you're using language they understand. Now, all in all, these three questions or these three general lines of questions: what's your client's identity? How does your offer serve them? And how does your content reflect all those? Arm you with the answers to finally cutting through the noise by calling out your audience and then customizing language or verbiage, aesthetics, and message in a way that really hits home for them. So that's it. But I want to give you some things to avoid too. Okay, so first, avoid relying on trends so much. If everybody else is using the same look on their grids, on their graphics, or on their websites, try something different. There's not a lack of creative design out there that will encapsulate who you are as a brand and as a person. So I have, you know, if you follow me on Instagram or Facebook, I actually talked about this, about being called out by these memes. So there's, you know, pop culture a little bit. There's what you call a starter pack meme where people put together certain elements of what a stereotypical brand or person is. And one of the latest starter pack memes is about the expensive burger joints where they have the industrial style setting, and their burgers are put together by those very expensive looking toothpicks, and then they serve their drinks in mason jars, and then yeah, so there's a lot of like aioli garlic fusions in their menu. And then people started chiming into the comments about what they believe are the stereotypical elements of a burger joint, of an expensive burger joint. And that really just enlightened something and illuminated something about branding, is that if your branding is being called out in a stereotype like that, then you probably relied on the trends too much. So try to avoid that when clarifying your identity as a brand. Second thing to avoid is to, playing safe with your messaging. You want to avoid that. If you have some polarizing ideas or thoughts, that's better than being an echo chamber for so many other people who are saying the same things. So really be true to your values. And if you're, if you're consistent enough with your content, people are going to start hearing you. And what will happen, of course, is you might eliminate or alienate some of the people that don't agree with that. That's okay, because what you're going to attract are people who are like-minded, who agree with you and align with your values. And that's much, much better moving forward, so that you can stay true to yourself. Third thing to avoid is overplaying the expert role. And I hear a lot, of people complaining about this, actually. So there are a lot of experts that really, really play that role so well that they forget that they're in front of beginners, and that these beginners look for basic or intermediate info about the industry. A lot of the things that you might know now might make sense to you, but it doesn't yet for your audience. So you have to remember that. So, giving you an example, I come across some spiritual gurus, for example, where they talk about, they say things like, oh, open the channels to your source of vibration, and then let your chakra be the guide in this journey of enlightenment. And I'm like, you already lost me. I'm trying to follow you because I'm achieving a certain state of mind. I want to be relaxed. I want to be happy. Well, where is that? Where are those words? What are we trying to accomplish? How exactly can you help me? So why not just say, I want to get you into a relaxed state of mind so that you can be happy or more grateful. I understand that. So try to simplify when you're teaching. Give your audience the chance or the grace to be a beginner. Because trust me, people will know you're an expert because you've helped them. And in the end, that's more important than appearing like the smartest person in the room. There you have it, my top tips on standing out with your unique brand positioning. If this video was helpful, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you plan on clarifying your brand positioning and you have any questions, comment down below. I'd love to hear from you.
You've been listening to the Story Selling Podcast. Catch you again next time for a brand new episode. If you like this topic or have a story you'd like to share, reach out and visit 16ramos.com.